This is just a little bit of a view into conversations that IT folks have after hours. You're going to be the fly on the wall as we sit down and talk through the things that we talk through.
I'm John Flory. I'm the CISO of Harbor Networks, 30-year vet in the technology / security field. I never thought I'd be saying that, but it's been a lot of change. It's been great.
I'm Philip Rogers. I'm the CIO from Protocol Networks. I've got a career in IT operations that started out through AOL, through telco companies in the 2000s. And before Protocol Networks, I was the head of service protection for the Americas for the Royal Bank of Scotland. I'm excited to have some conversations and see where they go.
Do you guys use those guys, Kaseya?
Oh, no, no.
What do you use, like Enable?
We actually don't. We don't manage desktops.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah, we haven't before. We actually might be moving into that business just because we're getting some of the companies that we work with are, how should I say it there? We're getting more and more interest from startup companies, and the startup companies want us to handle everything as opposed to basically everything on the back end, their desktops or somebody else. So we might get into that business. But Kaseya, I've always kind of had a bad taste towards Kaseya. It's just...
I don't like them either. I never did.
Yeah.
I know somebody works there I don't like. That's why I was...
Well, they used it at the Royal Bank of Scotland for Citizens Bank, and they used it primarily for software deployment and software self-service, things like that. But Kaseya is just... it hasn't necessarily kept up with the times. But this is also one of those watershed breaches that supply chain attacks are going to become even more common in the future because it's more efficient. Now, from Kaseya's perspective, I would be upset that it got out, that they knew about this since about April and just haven't patched it.
I mean, it's just crazy to me.
Yeah.
I thought there would be more rumblings than there were from it. I haven't heard that much, just personally. I thought we'd get killed.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with it being such small companies that got impacted.
Yeah, maybe. Right.
If you have robust endpoint protection, then the Kaseya attack really didn't impact you. But if you didn't, if you were trusting on Kaseya to be responsible for security from one end to the other, then you were completely exposed. But yeah, this was a weird one. Because the Russian people that were doing it, they seem to be...
Revealed.
Well, yeah, they seem to be rushed.
Well, I think maybe they wanted for the 4th.
Well, I think that they just wanted to get it in before the patch was fixed, because the patch was supposed to go out that weekend.
Yeah, that could have been too. I thought it was more of the ruin everybody's 4th, but maybe.
Yeah, I think that they were rushing for the patch, because traditionally that's a group that waits there, bides their time, does it on their timetable. I think they kind of just did it just because this was going to be the... they were going to lose it. So they just had to get something out there. It also explains why they asked for a bargain basement rate. Costco pricing for $70 million. But I'm kind of surprised Kaseya just didn't pay it, sweep it under the rug, because Kaseya's done.
I agree. It's see something, say something. There's so many people that, they'll open their mouths. It's hard to contain that.
Yeah. But they were small enough that you could lie about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you had proper incident response plan and you executed it, you could.
Yep.
You could get away with it. Right now, there's 4 states that have proposed legislator to make it illegal to pay ransom. New York, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Texas. So that's going to be very, very interesting. Where the debate is, it should be mandatory to report a ransomware incident, whether it was PII or not. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff's bouncing around in the legislature. And from where I sit, it's hard. If you're going to say you can't pay a ransom, what are you going to do to compensate for that? What are you going to do to help? These companies will go out of business.
And when it comes to not paying a ransom, does that mean only companies that are incorporated in those states? Is it are headquartered in those states? Does it restrict employees that are based in those states from making the payments? Can the person in Oklahoma make the payment on behalf of their Texas company?
Right. State by state again, right?
Yeah, there's so many loopholes for that even if Texas does ban it and a company comes through and makes a payment out of their Massachusetts office or out of Ohio or something like that, what prosecutor is going to go after them? Because they're going to go in and just go, well, it wasn't clear. We didn't make any payments out of Texas, but we did out of, you know, we're a multi-state company or a multinational company. It was another division that decided to make the payment. Yeah, if it's state by state like that, there are way too many loopholes. Yeah, there are way too many ways of getting around it. It's how companies like Halliburton used to do business with Iran, because they would just do it out of a subsidiary that was based in a country that had no restrictions about doing deals with Iran.
Yeah. It's interesting. I just don't know. It's easy to say. It's not easy when you're in the situation not to pay too. It's easy to say, oh, don't pay. It's bad. Don't pay the bad people. But there are situations I've certainly sat around the table where they couldn't get their data.
Yes.
They had no choice. They shut the doors right now. I don't know if you're going to say, okay, you can't pay. What are you going to do for them? What's the offset? I don't know. It just seems kind of like, okay.
Well, there are so many factors. One, you know, is somebody going to find out about it? Two, are they going to have the means and the wherewithal to prosecute? And what prosecutor from a state level is going to prosecute a company that's large enough to be an employer in those states that would be big enough to make news? You know, if you're Texas and you've got the Midland Oil Company or something like that, and they're the ones that make the payment, what Texas prosecutor is going to go after the Midland Oil Company when they've got like 40,000 employees that are local to Texas? You know, they're going to drive that company out of business and cause job loss in Texans? That guy gets elected. Of course he's not going to do that. You know, silly laws that are being passed around with people looking to make a little bit of political hay and get some notoriety, but there's absolutely no enforceability behind it.
I agree. Yeah. And state by state's ridiculous.
Yes.
It's just like the privacy laws. They're all state by state. You know, even a lot of the cyber laws are. It just makes it a mess for a lot of the reason you stated.
Oh, yeah. At least you can default when it comes to cyber privacy laws. You know that if you do okay by the California and the Massachusetts standards, you're okay. If you're a large company, you go for the most restrictive, because even the most restrictive aren't very restrictive.
Right. Well, California's starting to get there, but yes.
Yeah. I mean, it was California, then it was Massachusetts. You know, there are a handful of states that are going to try to be, you know, on the edge of cyber lawmaking, but you're relying on federal or state lawmakers that make $30,000 a year to do this, and they're not going to come through with really strong cyber protection laws.
100%.
You know, these are part-time politicians that don't have backgrounds in it, and the other people that are willing to help are lobbyists for companies that are going to not give good laws. Wow, I just realized that I'm kind of pessimistic about how our state legislators work, but...
It's a mess. It's a mess. I mean, Europe showed us the way with GDPR, but we just did not follow.
Well, I mean, even with GDPR, how long did it take from idea to going into effect? And I mean, I could even argue today that it's not fully rolled out yet. I mean, it's close.
Well, it's not applicable to any government, which is interesting. The government agencies in the EU are exempt, which is just crazy to me, but it's probably figures. You know, I mean, think about that. These agencies and these organizations generally don't have the best cyber posture or personnel or technology on top of it. So to make them exempt, just going to open the door for, where are you going to go? I'm going to go right there. Yep. Right? Because I know it's fairly easy to get. They're exempt, so they don't have to do the safeguards. It's public that they're exempt. So I think that's another open door.
Well, I think it was just the second half of the second term of the Obama administration that they really were focusing on the roles of national cybersecurity, where we're years behind. You know, we're years behind a lot of other, well, look at the EU, you know, we're years behind just because we kind of look at the rugged individualism of the American states, and we don't want to dictate from a federal standpoint, but What are you going to do? Lock 7 doors in your house and leave one wide open?
Well, that's what's happening.
Yeah.
I mean, and they'll find it. They'll find it right now.
Oh, it's always going to be North Dakota's fault. You know, it's somebody that's gonna be lag behind, or Montana. You know, let's alienate hundreds of thousands of potential clients. But yeah, there are always going to be a couple of states out there that just don't consider it a priority, and they'd rather err on the side of having no restrictions than having some that might be mildly inconvenient.
100%. Yeah. So it's interesting to see what's going to happen. I don't think we're scaring anybody internationally either, which is a problem.
No. And the other way of going about something like this is to have a standards organization bubble up from the grassroots in the United States. But I just don't necessarily see that happening, just because a lot of the folks that you would need to have for an organization like that work for large companies and large organizations, that the last thing they want to do is have some of their senior IT thinkers going off and do something that might be counterproductive for corporate goals. Just look at ITIL. You know, look at what it takes to come up with some standards around how to handle change and incident management, let alone something that has to be rapidly changing like cybersecurity standards.
Yeah, I mean, it seems just overwhelming. Yeah, from that perspective.
Yep. One of the other questions that I've got for you, John, is with things that are going on right now, are you getting different kinds of questions from your client base around security than you're expecting? Like, what are the questions that they're asking you? Are they thinking about things that are different from the way that we think about things?
Well, it's still the same, believe it or not, the same pre-breach, post-breach mentality. It really hasn't changed that much. In other words, pre-breach, you know, it's not going to happen to me. I've got the safeguards. Even with all that's going on, it's still a matter of, until we have an incident or until we get scared or have that feeling, I'm still seeing resistance. They'll try to do the minimum. They'll talk to you, but what they're doing is they're delaying. And what they're bringing up is, you know, they're seeing a lot more in the news about ransomware. But I think the two things that right now are happening to people out there is software companies and sales organizations lulling consumers into this mindset of, our software will protect you from ransomware. And because they're told that, because it's in writing and they're seeing it, they're believing it. And then they're not doing the proper layering and defensibility. They're not realizing that security is foundational. And it starts with the business principles being met by policy. Right. And that's where your security starts. And the biggest miss I'm seeing out there, the biggest misnomer, is people think tools are security and people think IT is security. I believe both of those are death. Those are both two failing equations. And that's why what I'm trying to do in my mission is, let's do a tabletop exercise with your stakeholders. Let's take a couple hours. We don't have to take a long time and a lot of money. And let's go through a couple incidents. And because if you don't have that understanding that it's not a firewall in IT that is going to protect me, it's me and what I'm doing personally that's putting my company at risk. If that is not realized, it's never going to win, because the technology is going to get beat. And I just see it every day. I can't, Philip. I have been responding to so many breaches, and it's the best technologies in the world. And it's there's no discrimination. You know, a lot of times it's a misconfig, or you know, there's absolutely the human element into it. And another thing that people are saying to me is, you know, and it's nothing new, but they really believe that once they offload that data into the cloud that the cloud provider is responsible for it. And it's not true. And it's really scary because you're only as strong as your weakest vendor, right? That's as strong as you are. So I don't know if I answered your question, but that's what I'm seeing.
And it's the same thing from an operational standpoint. I find myself having this discussion frequently. Why didn't this show up in monitoring? Right. You know, even just from an operational standpoint, like, you know, keep security out of it for now. The response to that in some cases is because we've never seen this before. This is new.
100%.
So monitoring and security for 99.99% of clients that are out there, it's lagging. You know, we look for something that we know breached somebody else, or we look for something that we know caused an outage for somebody else. The first person to get hit by something, well, all you do is become a model for everybody else. And when it comes to things like application monitoring, well, this application had a bug that was just patched in, and it's causing the applications to hang and fail. Well, we're seeing this, but it's not actually showing up in monitoring everywhere. Why are you guys dropping the ball? I'm like, well, we didn't know to look for that before. If it happens again, we now have a pattern that we can look for. We can look at what's going on, and we can even give recommendations for resolution. But, you know, it's tough. And it's even worse when it comes to security. You know, with the international marketplace around, you know, sale and transfer of zero-day attacks, what are we going to do? Are we going to kind of shoehorn our way into that marketplace to potentially buy the zero days so we can patch them into antivirus and endpoint protection? And if so, if one company did it, if Kaspersky went out and bought it, would they share it with the rest of the industry?
Right. Right. We're always going to be lagging there. They're a step ahead every time. And we talk about it all the time, right? They only have to be right once. Right? Yes. They attack it as millions and millions of times per day. And it's just that one time. And the attacks have constantly changed. So speaking of monitoring, and so the attacks probably 6 months ago, for probably 18 months, were 2 o'clock in the morning, go in while you're sleeping, take your data. And then people have started to adopt to MDR and 24/7 monitoring and behavioral analytics and all this. And it definitely helped. But now I'm seeing the criminals. What they're doing now is they're very methodically, when you're not logged in at 2 o'clock during the day, they're going in for 10 minutes during the day because it's not an anomaly. And it doesn't look weird. And they do the low and slow. They'll take a very little bit at a time and just take their time and do it. And so I see all these people. I have monitoring. I promote that. That visibility is absolutely crucial, and it's one of the best shots you have. But it can get beat, and people need to understand that these criminals are very smart, very sophisticated, and they have a lot of power because they have a lot of information that's readily available. They're really figuring out, how do I get around these technologies? So really, incident response and being able to respond instead of react quickly is really becoming more and more and more important. You know, when this blows up, what are you going to do? And it's something that is really, when I look at NIST and, you know, identify all the stages of NIST, for years, I was like, wow, when I look at this, what's more important? Is it more important to detect? Is it more important to respond? And they're all really important, but it's to the point now where you're going to have incidents, period. It's not that if, but when, old cliche, blah, blah, blah. There's going to be incidents, and they know it because they're having incidents. And it's really, the difference is going to be, what do you do when that happens? That's the differentiator at this juncture where we're at. You know, are you going to be able to shut that down and minimize the damage, or are you not? And if you don't and you misstep, all hell breaks loose.
In some ways, it's better to have smaller scale responses that build your organization's ability to handle things when the big things happen.
Right on.
Than to build the bubble around somebody. And when things do happen, it to just be the most awful thing that ever happened to an organization. Yeah, I guess this goes back to our conversation earlier, which is, you know, we're going to get colds, we're going to get sick and stuff like that because we're building up our immune system. We need to build up our company's immune systems, our corporate immune systems. And the only way to do that is to be exposed to little bits and little things of things that can hurt us. And eventually, you know, you want to make sure that you've got something that's robust enough that can make sure it doesn't kill us.
Yeah.
If you asked me 10 years ago if that would be my thinking and philosophy around IT security, I would have laughed. I would have said, no, that's incredibly pessimistic. And there's no way that we're going to get there. But it's where we are.
No, it's where we are. And we predicted it in our last, podcast about the supply chain attacks. It's going to be on the increase. And the SolarWinds is the tip of the iceberg, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's really unfolding. It's alarming. I've been doing it for a long time, right? Forever. And we're at a different spot right now. We're at a spot where my heart breaks for people because, you know, they're human beings and the spot they're in is, it's interesting because it's like an adrenaline rush because you want to help, you want to show value, and you want to make sure you do whatever you can do. But the reality is, in the end, this is destroying people's lives, destroying their careers. I have worked on, for the last couple months, a couple specific breaches with entrepreneurs. And these hackers, they're taking their time. They're going into their bank accounts. Then they can set the ransom to a spot where they're able to have a better chance of getting the ransom and everything else. But it's put some people out of business and it's shaken me. To the point where it's like a doctor and somebody's dying. You feel like this is not what I'm here to do. I'm here to make sure that these people don't go out of business. And I'm telling you right now, there are times I can't help them. There are times that it's just to the point where they can't recover and their business is desolated. I had a guy who built a professional services practice in financial, and he had a tremendous practice for 30 years, literally lost it overnight. And I'm not kidding. And it's interesting too, Philip, because we were in talking to his people and then him for 3 months and talking to him that, hey, this danger is out there. Mm-hmm. And he sat on it.
Yeah.
They just sit on it. They sit on it as long as they can sit on it until they get bit. And then they get bit, and sometimes it's too late. And that's not a scare tactic. That's what I'm living.
No, it just is. And you look at some industries and some startups, and the cost from a security prevention standpoint are prohibitive for some organizations from standing up at all. And, right. You know, you kind of look at it, you feel bad in some ways, but it's become odd. The thing for me is when you deal with state actors, they have unlimited resources, unlimited time, unlimited manpower. With that, they will get in anywhere they want to. They will. It's just a matter of when. And that's what people have to realize. And most of these organizations, most of these smaller companies, they're going to fly under the radar. But what gets me is these small organizations that make a big splash in media and then are surprised when they get attention.
100%.
Attention is a two-edged blade, and you get good attention and you get bad attention. If you tell somebody that you've got the best jewelry store in town near a startup and you've got the most expensive, the most elaborate jewelry in the world, and then you're surprised when somebody tries to rob your jewelry store,
right?
That's what happens.
Right. It's a balancing act we all play.
Yep.
Even these podcasts, right? Make us a target.
Oh, yeah.
So in order to find us at Harbor Networks, you can head over to www.harbornetworks.com or go to LinkedIn and type in Harbor Networks. And you'll be directed right to our page.
And for Protocol Networks, we are protocolnetworks.com. And the same thing, best to find us on LinkedIn. We're not the best when it comes to Twitter.